All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. So glad you could join us today. Many people are just one medical emergency away from a financial crisis. It's easy for medical bills to pile up, given the high cost of hospitals and healthcare, even for people who have medical insurance. In a survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation this year, 41% of American adults said they had debt related to medical care. They either directly owed medical debt or they paid their medical bills by taking on other debt, including credit cards or personal bank loans, or they borrowed money from family and friends. That's 41% of Americans. So Minnesotans are a bit less likely to have medical debt, mostly due to our state's health insurance programs for people with low incomes. But that debt still takes a huge toll. It creates stress and prevents people from renting homes and buying cars. It makes people less likely to seek the medical care they need. It even contributes to bankruptcy. And medical debt is even more common in communities of color. So today we're talking about how to tackle medical debt. And I want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open. Do you have medical debt? Are you struggling to pay hospital bills? Or maybe you're trying to manage high bills from mental health services or personal care assistance or dental care. How is this debt affecting you? What questions do you have for our guests? You can call us at 651-227-6000. Or you can call 800-242-2828. Tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Let me bring in our guest. We have with us Allison Sesso. Allison is the president and CEO of RIP Medical Debt. That's a national nonprofit organization that uses donations to buy and forgive medical debt. Allison joins us from New York. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for your time. Here in the studio with me, I have Kim Miller. Kim is a certified financial counselor with Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. She works with clients who have debt and is involved with advocacy on the state level to make some changes to lessen the impact of medical debt on people with low incomes. I'm so glad you could join us, Kim.
Hi, Angela. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's get into this conversation. Allison, first, describe what we're really talking about when we say medical debt. How do you define what it is?
Well, it's the amount that the patient owes after getting services, which in our country, in the United States, is more and more common. The expectation that the patient has a responsibility and a portion of the bill to pay is built into our system. So whatever you can't pay of that portion becomes debt. And unfortunately, there isn't alignment between what an actual individual can pay in terms of their means, like what their income is compared to what could be put in front of them in terms of their bill. And there's not, even if you have insurance, there's a lot of times that you will end up with a pretty hefty bill in front of you. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't matter if you don't have the, you know, income or the means to pay that.
And what is particularly difficult about medical debt is that it's, you know, an accident or you get sick. It's not because of something necessarily that you, a situation you create, but it causes so many problems.
Absolutely. That's I think one of the biggest things is what's happening. And you mentioned this at the intro, people avoid getting care. And then what happens is the situation spirals. I mean, you can't control your body, right? There's a sort of myth that, you know, well, if you stop smoking, if you ate healthier, you know, that it's like complete control. Human bodies deteriorate over time, inevitably. That's just how we're built. And eventually you will need care. And you're right. Sometimes, you know, in the world, you know, has risks. You walk around, you can choke on something, you can fall, it's not something that you could control for. And so the idea that you have some kind of relational control over how much care you might need is a myth. And so we have to be realistic that people of all ages will at some point need to get care. And this, what we're doing with this financial situation is we're creating barriers for people, and they do avoid getting the care that they need and undermine their overall health and well-being.
Because they already have a big bill. There's already debt. So if you think you're sick or someone else in the family is sick, you're less likely to then seek out additional care.
Or just knowing this, like people, you know, people are very cognizant and aware that going to the hospital will potentially create a financial hardship, and they act accordingly. I mean, people sit literally in the parking lots of ERs waiting to see if the pain that they're feeling will subside so that they don't have to walk through those doors and later feel the financial hit.
How did COVID, the pandemic, affect medical debt? Allison, what did you see?
Yeah, it's a complicated question for a variety of reasons, because a number of factors that contribute to medical debt changed because of COVID. First of all, government came to the table a little bit more. So there was something like the CARES Act, which did provide funding to hospitals for COVID. It was certainly imperfect, but it did change a little bit the dynamic in terms of how much money was there from government to pay for those kinds of bills. And insurance companies actually changed their behavior a little bit too. And then individuals changed their behavior. Some of them, you know, didn't go get care that wasn't related to COVID because everyone was staying inside trying to avoid getting sick, particularly before there were vaccines. And then on top of that, you know, you look at the economic situation, a lot of people's economic situation deteriorated as a result of COVID, and a lot of people lost their jobs. And because of the fact that in the United States, you usually get your insurance through your employer, a lot of people we saw lost their insurance, which then makes you at higher risk for medical debt. So there was a lot of different factors that were at play. So it's sort of hard to say whether or not the numbers for medical debt went up or down, but it certainly was a factor in the whole COVID situation.
Kim, you're with LSS Financial Counseling here in the Twin Cities. What have you seen with your clients as you've worked with them to tackle this medical debt?
We have found that, unfortunately, a lot of medical hospital systems, it's harder to make affordable payment arrangements. Mm-hmm. And so when they, you know, Allison hit the nail on the head and as far as the reasons why people may have out-of-pocket medical costs. But then when the time comes, they would like to make payments over time. Mm-hmm. But a lot of hospital systems, when they call in, you know, this has changed over the years. Before, you know, 15, 20 years ago, people would be able to call in. It would be a local billing office. They could make payments, you know, just over time, maybe over a year or even longer. And now a lot of times those medical bills, they're saying they need to be paid off in 4 months or less. And when you're looking at a, you know, $1,000 medical bill, that's hundreds of dollars a month in payments.
So you can't give what you don't have.
Right, exactly. And so then as a result, then that leads to more medical collections.
And so how do many of these families or people you work with, how do they end up in debt?
Well, and I think it's just, we're in a situation where, you know, for a period of time, the savings rate did increase, but now we're back into people, you know, having just everything's being stretched with the cost of living. And we're still having 60% of Americans not being able to have $1,000 in emergency savings.
Right. There's no savings account to go to. Right.
And so when you, so it just kind of snowballs, you know, like, you know, when you, your car breaks down, you need a car to get to work, to have a paycheck comes in. So that becomes a priority. And then a lot of times in everything else, you know, cost of goods go up, cost of gas go up. And then all of a sudden you have this medical bill and it's just one more on top of this pile. And then unfortunately it just kind of, you know, snowballs from there. And so that's how, you know, people feel like they need, that's where they turn to, you know, other types of, you know, debt, credit cards, high interest rate loans, you know, that type of thing to be able to easily accessible credit, unfortunately, comes at a cost. And so that's how people end up in debt to make ends meet.
We're talking about medical debt and ways to tackle it, how to get out of it, and what resources are out there to help. And we're taking your phone calls. Do you have medical debt? You can give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. As I talk with our guests, I want to hear from you, too. I want to take a phone call already from one of our listeners in Bloomington. Victor is on the phone. Good morning, Victor.
Good morning. Thank you for that. Tackling this sort of topic, it is more than pandemic on a lot of people in Minnesota. If I'll be honest with you, I am in a medical bill a debt for about 6 years now. I make payment plan. You pay, it's not going anywhere. And unfortunately for me, I had medical insurance by then. But unfortunately, my ex took me off the insurance that I did not know. And before I realized that there was a bill to pay, it went to collection. The collection part of it is what is killing people. And it frustrates you. You'll be paying and you don't see the end of it. So my point is, if the government or the legislators can look into some of these things and address it, if possible, it will reduce medical debt in the state.
Victor, could you tell us how much was the debt? How much money are we talking about?
It was about close to $5,000.
$5,000. And you've been dealing with this for 6 years now?
Yes.
Okay. Let's hear from our guest on this. Kim, here is the story that Victor is describing, going into collections. Is that something you hear a lot?
Yes. Yes. When we look at people's credit reports, a lot of times we do see medical debt on people's credit reports.
And what do we know about credit reports and what can be done about that? Is there anything that's happening that would offer an explanation for it?
Well, I think a lot of times when you aren't able to pay the bill off in the timeline of the hospital system, and then they write it off as bad debt and they send it to either a third party collection agency to try to to get the money that way, and then it gets reported on your credit report. Now, in his case, it's unfortunately a higher amount, but then there's protections, and then there's different rules in place regarding debt collection that that we could explore with the people that we work with. But there has been changes now in credit reporting for collections to provide a little bit more breathing space for people. So starting the beginning of this month, now all three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, are no longer going to be reporting unpaid medical bills until 12 months have passed. So previously, you had 6 months before they put it on your credit report, and now they have up to a year. So now we are, this is, of course, before this, as it goes to collections, we encourage people that this is, try to clear it up or try to make payment arrangements to avoid this from being reported. But also with this rule, all paid medical collections will now be removed from your credit report. And so if, let's say, this person's able to make an arrangement and to, eventually work to pay this off either through a settlement or things like that, then it would be removed. Then going forward, it wouldn't follow around.
That's a big deal. Those changes, big deals.
It's a big deal. Yep.
Allison, what did you hear in Victor's call there? Medical bills for him, 6 years of trying to deal with a debt of about $5,000. And there were some issues with insurance there. Is that a common story that you hear?
Unfortunately, it's extremely common. I would say, it's something we hear all the time and that we're working really hard to protect people against. Just back to those credit agency changes, I think that those are all in the right direction. There's also an additional one bills under $500 will not be put on credit reports, which is good because, believe it or not, there's a fair amount of medical debt that people can't pay even at $500. A lot of the average amount is about $3,000, which, if you think about it, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not an insurmountable amount of money for overall for And that's, I think, where the economic part of this equation comes in. Medical debt is not just the failures of our health, our healthcare financing system, but it's also the failures of our economic system overall. The fact that people do not have, the ability to pay down a $5,000 debt over 6 years is a problem in and of itself. And those two things sort of, people not having enough means and the increased expectation of the healthcare system that people pay clash together and really make this a very common story for way too many Americans these days. And I just want to also go back to the credit reporting situation. I think those changes are very good. We're very happy. It's a step in the right direction. But I still fundamentally question whether or not medical debt should be on credit reports in the first place because of the fact that it really is not a good indication of a person's credit worthiness because it is so different from other kinds of debt because of the fact that you have very little control over whether or not you incur a debt. You can have insurance and you can still get debt. You can, you know, do all the right things. You can look for the financial assistance policy that a hospital might have in advance. There could be somebody out of network. There's so many loopholes and pitfalls in front of the individual that it's really extreme. So I just want to put that out there. The recent survey by Kaiser said that the number one reason people are indicator of whether or not you get into medical debt is not whether or not you have insurance. It's whether or not you get sick.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're all going to get sick.
Correct.
At some point. All right. We're talking about medical debt with two guests, but we're also taking your phone calls. So I want to hear your stories. Do you have medical debt? Are you struggling to pay those hospital bills or bills for long-term care or maybe it's even for mental health services or dental work? How have you managed to do this? And how is this debt affecting you? What questions do you have for our guests? You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And Kim and Allison, I want to ask you more about the work that you guys are doing. But first, I want to take another phone call from a listener in Minneapolis. Lisa is on the line. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What do you want to share with us about medical debt?
Well, medical debt is not dissimilar to other debt. And what the listeners need to understand is debt collection is an industry. The original creditors lose patience in collecting bills, and they combine the unpaid bills into bundles and sell them to the debt collection industry. What's important for listeners also to know is that most debt arises out of contractual relationships. There are statutes of limitation on the enforceability of debts arising out of contractual relationships. Unfortunately, it's rather long. If it's a written contract, it's mostly 10 years.
And Lisa,
this is not student debt. There are governmental programs that have different statutes of limitations.
Now, Lisa, do you have a legal background? You sound like you know this.
I'm licensed in Minnesota and Illinois, where I practiced law for over 35 years. Mm. And this is one of my main focuses. Mm.
All right, that's Lisa. And Lisa, what do you want people to know as we talk with our guests, and we'll get more into this, but what do you want people to know who are dealing with medical debt?
There is a statute of limitation on the contract that created the debt in the first place. Mm. If it's more than 10 years old, but you're still being bothered by debt collectors, that's an unfair Debt Collection Practices Act claim. For most people, what they need to know is education on how to deal with the used to be just two, now three credit reporting agencies. So debts, medical and otherwise, more than 10 years old ought to be expunged from credit reports.
All right, Lisa, I want to turn to our guests. Kim, you're nodding here. And so what Lisa is describing is about, first of all, just this limitations on how long they can keep coming after you. What do you want people to know?
Yes, she brought up a good point. So, you know, debt, we joke that it may feel like it, but there is no debtor's, you know, debt doesn't follow you the rest of your life, especially under credit report. And it does vary by state as far as how legally, how long they could potentially come after you and then try to get at your assets or, you know, garnishment for your paycheck. And so in Minnesota, it's 6 years from the date of, you know, and on your credit report, it only will be on your credit report for 7 years from the date of last payment. And so for medical debt right now, you know, and so it's a complicated issue and it's not just straightforward. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want you to hold it against me.
Another lawyer later.
Yeah. But. So, but it does, you know, it does eventually, it can fall off your credit report if it's unpaid, and then, but it doesn't mean that there's not consequences in the meantime. And that's in Minnesota, especially, which we can talk about too, is the practice of revenue recapture in Minnesota, where, even though there are protections for people through the debt collection practices, the state, if a hospital has has a building on public government property, they are able to use the Department of Revenue to use revenue recapture to collect on unpaid medical bills. And revenue recapture is really a polite way of saying they're just going to seize your tax refund, without sometimes, they try to give notice to people, but a lot of times, medical debt comes in a period of chaos. They may not be paying attention. And all of a sudden, unpaid medical bill goes by. They're waiting for their tax refund, especially right now in August when the renter's rebates are coming. And that's a substantial amount of money that people can get to replenish their savings, to pay off debt, to get ahead. And all of a sudden that can get swiped because of an unpaid medical bill. And so that is something that right now is still a practice used by some hospital systems.
Mm. Allison, anything that you would add to what our listener called in to talk about, after a certain amount of time, they can no longer go after you for this debt.
Yeah, so I agree. It's not as cut. That is true to some degree. There are also ways that clock starts up again. Mm-hmm. If you start to make payments in certain situations. I also, honestly, I fundamentally just have to say that I have a real problem with the idea that we as individuals have to be in this position where we're on the phone, where we're fighting against what's on our credit report, where we're fighting with the hospital, which we're having to become our own advocates as a normal course of business when we go to the hospital. So, it's like only here in the United States where we make you pay so much out of your pocket, where there's so much room for error, where we misalign what you can pay to what you owe. Is there a situation where individuals are forced to pick up the phone and spend hours debating with their insurance company, going back with the hospital at a time when likely they're sick because they went to the hospital? Mm-hmm. So I just fundamentally have a problem with this idea that the answer to this problem is self-advocacy. I also think there's a real racial dynamic to that issue. We know that medical debt, like so many other things in the United States, hits people of color more readily. For example, in Minnesota, it's 12% of white communities have medical debt compared to 29% of communities of color. And, part of the thing is if you're being a self-advocate, we know that Black people have different outcomes when they are forced to self-negotiate compared to white people, and they're worse outcomes. And so I do want to sort of point out or question the fundamental idea that individuals should have to fight and be on the phone and do all of that work individually. We really do need to fix this more fundamentally.
Because not everybody is able to do it. First of all, not able to necessarily have the time to do it. They may not know who to call or what to say. Is that something that you counsel people about at LSS Financial Counseling? How to have these conversations, who to call and what to say?
Yes. And this is where it is frustrating. And I do agree with Allison that it's a twofold thing, is that, yes, there needs to be some fundamental changes to the overall system. And in the meantime, I like to say, we still have to play the game, whether we want to or not. And so, so it's a matter of, this is what we do at LSS Financial Counseling. We work with people where they're at. We hear their situation and we walk through some options that may be helpful to them. Because, I think we've shown that the different nuances and medical debt and just different financial situations, what works for one person is not going to work for another. Mm-hmm. And so this is where, we work with people, we tailor things, we give them action steps, and we help them feel support. And most importantly, that they're not alone. I think debt in mm-hmm. general can really isolate people and make them feel like they're the only ones that are in it. And the reality is we are all in it, and we can help each other and support and help people find some ways to be able to move forward.
I want to take some more phone calls from our listeners. We're starting to get lots of folks calling in, and we're talking about medical debt. Do you have medical debt? Bills from hospital care or maybe dental work, mental health services that you're struggling to pay? Call us at 651-227-6000. Again, that is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828 as we talk about ways to tackle this and deal with it and the resources that are available to help. In Pine River, Drew is on the phone. Good morning, Drew. And what did you want to share with us about medical debt?
Well, it's kind of a complex problem. I live in a house that is not mine. It would be, say, for $28,000 in debt that my partner owed when she left this world. She had cancer. I myself am disabled, and there's this debt against this house. I'm unable. Now I'm running out of cash of my own, but there's not even any way I can sell the house because it's not mine. I don't know what to do.
Drew, I'm sorry for the loss of your partner, and your partner was going through cancer treatments?
Yes, ma'am.
And so that led to the medical debt?
Right.
Right. Allison, is this a common story as well that Drew is describing there in Pine River?
Drew, I am so sorry for this situation. I think it's really unconscionable that this is the situation that you've been put in. And unfortunately, it is extremely common. And people, I think you said it earlier, Angela, that people feel alone and that this is a normal, that they feel like this is something that they have to deal with. It's very common. What we've been doing at RIP Medical Debt is trying to get our hands on as much medical debt as we can and relieving people like yourself of that debt. What we need is hospitals to sell us that debt. And so I would like to just take a moment and say to all the Minnesota hospitals, please engage with us. We are an endorsed business partner of the Minnesota Hospital Association. They have looked at our model and they think it's great. And we could, if we can get the hospitals that provided that cancer treatment, if we could get our hands on that debt, we could potentially buy it up and get rid of it. And that is what we're out there trying to do. So Drew, I do hope that we would be able to get our hands on that debt, but it all also would require the Minnesota hospital that you worked with to engage with us. And so that's kind of exactly what we're doing. And we're constantly hearing these stories. And I have to say, you know, you feel the sense of overwhelm that mm-hmm. people are feeling. And that is one element of medical debt that I think, you know, we often, and even here in this conversation today, we're focused on the financial implications, you know, what it does to your credit. But even without the credit report, people are feeling overwhelmed and mentally exhausted by the medical debt, especially if it's impacting their financial situation. But even when it's not, people want to be responsible. They feel a sense of failure when they're unable to pay a medical debt, even though when you really look at the face of it, it's an unreasonable expectation that we've set up for people. But so, Drew, I really feel for you. And unfortunately, I will tell you that you are not at all alone. It is increasingly common that individuals have other financial losses and are in a spiral down position as a result of something like cancer or even a less impactful situation. And just imagine it. I mean, he has a loss of his mate, mm-hmm. and at the same time is dealing with this financial hit. It's unconscionable.
And worried about losing his home. Allison, I, in the introduction, we described RIP Medical Debt as a national nonprofit that uses donations to buy and forgive medical debt. And I understand that almost 20 churches across Minnesota in the past have given money to RIP Medical Debt. I'm looking at a list, St. Michael Lutheran Church in Roseville, Falcon Heights United Church of Christ, a number of congregations in Winona, including Wesley United Methodist Church, Grace Presbyterian Church. Do you see a lot of participations from religious congregations who are raising money and then working with you all to help buy back this medical debt and help families who are struggling?
Yes, actually. So we as an organization have, believe it or not, relieved since we started in 2014, nearly $7 billion of medical debt. So we're on a roll. And about $1 billion of that was funded directly from churches. So I would say they are a substantial part of the solution for RIP medical debt. And yeah, there's this great alliance called The Alliance, T-H-E-E, that is made up of, like you said, nearly 20 faith communities. Their goal is to raise $1 million, and they've raised nearly $260,000 to date, and have already alleviated, with that $260,000, $38 million in debt for 30,000 people. So they are on a roll. And we do definitely see churches as a big part of this solution and active participants in this fight and this overall model that we're doing to relieve medical debt for pennies on the dollar.
Okay, we're going to take a news break here, but Kim, anything you want to say about resources like RIP medical debt, intervening, trying to help?
I think it's wonderful. I think this is where, understanding and collectively working together, this is where we can make the change.
Let's take a phone call right now from Minneapolis, where Joyce is on the line. Good morning, Joyce, and what's going on with you?
Good morning. Well, I will tell you to begin with, I am actually really anxious about trying to tell you what's going on with me, which is very much like what happens when I try to take care of my medical debt. I have all kinds of medical bills that are unpaid and all kinds of debt collectors, and it is my medical condition itself that is causing this problem. Mm-hmm. I am a victim of a violent assault a number of years ago by strangers, which left me with a lot of medical bills and left me with a traumatic brain injury and damage to my visual cortex, so my short-term memory. I can't read or understand my medical bills. I can't read or understand what comes from my health insurance. I have good health insurance, but they're very slow, so the statements from them are completely unreadable, to me at least, and they come long after the bill. So I don't understand what I owe to who. I'm unable to pay it, not because I don't have money, but because I can't read the bills and I don't understand them. And also I have a lot of fatigue, so trying to keep track of all of this and follow through is beyond me. And I know your guest is talking about, oh, we can help. Things like figuring out who can help me and making those phone calls are also beyond my abilities because of my brain injury. So,
well, Joyce, I'm happy that you are listening to us this morning, and I am so sorry for the assault that you suffered, the injuries that you have, that you have as a result of it, and now this problem with medical debt. And let's see if we can get some help for you. So, stay on the line with us, Joyce. First, Kim, what would you say to what Joyce is describing? A lot of difficulties right now.
I would say, Joyce, you are not alone in your situation. And again, I'm so sorry that you've had these experiences and these difficulties. And I've worked with a lot of people, as a lot of people have come into my office with bags of bills. And that's what sometimes we
literally
did together, literally bags of bills. And sometimes the first step is just, number one, gathering up all the bills and putting them in a bag. And then another time might be setting up an appointment and, and then coming in and talking with one of our counselors. And I've helped open up mail and taking out the statements, and we put them in piles and we see if there's duplicates. But I agree with you that the whole process is overwhelming, and you get a lot of duplicate statements, and you get a lot of, statements from the insurance company and things like that. But that's where you don't feel like you have to be alone, is that we're here to help. We can help you look at the bills. We can help you sort them out. And then we can determine, what might need to happen. And if it's not something that we can do, a lot of times we can partner with other great nonprofit agencies that do provide that extra help and that support, and to see if you qualify for additional services for assistance.
So, Joyce, you're there in Minneapolis, and Kim, LSS Financial Counseling. Mm-hmm. You're here in the Twin Cities, or where are you located?
Yeah, we're located statewide. So we have offices in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and then also in Bemidji. And Duluth, trying to think of all the places, Wilmer. And so, yeah, so you can give us a call at 888-577-2227 to determine if there's an office that's nearby, if we can do it by phone. Or you could also, we are now taking in-person appointments. So, you can see if there's someone that you could meet with there.
So, again, that is, Kim is with LSS Lutheran Financials Service. Financial counseling.
LSS Financial Counseling.
And Joyce, stay with us, because I want Allison to speak to you as well. Allison, you heard Joyce describe what she's dealing with, her medical debt, but also dealing with all the bills, the statements, understanding it, and she's still injured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's extremely common. I mean, that's what I was talking about earlier. Like, I really feel like part of the problem here is that you're expecting somebody to be an advocate for themselves in a moment where they're, not able, they're least able to. And it's very complicated. It's not like you have to go to one place. You often have to go to the hospital and try to renegotiate. You have to find if your bill went to a collection agency. You have to find out if your bill was sold to a different, and once it's sold into the for-profit, collection agency field, it can move around. And so it could, like, you know, disappear for a little while, and then all of a sudden somebody else bought it. And so they're trying to collect on that. And so it's extremely complicated in terms of that. And that's actually what our model takes advantage of. I think an earlier caller talked about the fact that that hospitals and other owners of debt sell them in bundles. That's exactly how we're able to operate as RIP medical debt. We buy the debt in bundles from the hospitals, and then instead of trying to collect on our investment, if you will, we just relieve the debts. And so I'm hopeful that if we can do some work in more work, and we're already actively working in Minnesota, we can actually get rid of some of those bills so that when LSS is doing its work, it could say, oh, look at this, you got this great, you know, letter from RIP medical debt that these three or four bills are actually already taken care of. So let's focus on the other two or three.
All right. I want to take some time to talk with another guest right now as we get into medical debt and how to tackle it. We have with us Laura Orr. Laura is a senior attorney focused on elder law at Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services based in St. Paul. Good morning to you, Laura.
Good morning, Angela.
Hi. Thank you for your patience for waiting. You know, you offer legal advice to older people. What kind of medical debt do older adults come to you with, and where does it come from?
In my caseload specifically, I most encounter older individuals who have medical debt related to long-term care. Mm-hmm. Long-term care is very expensive. Here in the state of Minnesota, the current monthly statewide average payment for skilled nursing care is over $9,000. And the system is confusing. One of your callers earlier, Drew, referred to how it's complicated. It's confusing. Mm-hmm. And individuals, before they have a medical need, they may have confidence in what they have in terms of health care coverage. They may think, I have Medicare. I might have a policy related to employment. But it isn't until they encounter a new need do they discover areas where that coverage may have gaps. For example, many forms of health insurance coverage do not cover long-term care. And so if an individual encounters a long-term care need, that debt can accumulate quickly. And also when a person's in that acute situation, that immediate need of care, the immediate thought is related to recovery, stabilization. There may not be those immediate conversations about how much is this costing? Is my insurance covering it? So that is the context in which I receive calls most commonly as a case handler in our office who works in elder law. I must acknowledge that our office provides legal services to individuals who are eligible across all age groups. So again, that accounts for what I most commonly see, but I want to affirm what some of your other guests have commented, that younger individuals, a car accident, a fall, one of your callers was a crime victim. Individuals of all ages encounter circumstances when they accumulate unanticipated medical debt.
So with long-term care, so we're talking about people in nursing homes or people who have personal care assistants who go to their homes to help take care of them because they're elderly or ill. Do you find folks are feeling as though they're getting threatened with eviction or getting discharged because they have so much debt that they're carrying?
Yes, that does occur. There are strong protections and protections that have become increasingly strong related to due process rights, meaning the rights of notice, the rights to have an opportunity for a hearing in those circumstances. But I will emphasize, non-payment is a legally valid ground for an assisted living to give a notice of contract termination for one of the residents, or a nursing home to give a notice of involuntary discharge. So our office does encounter and provide legal services to individuals who have been receiving long-term care and they've been unable to figure out a way to manage this growing debt. And the event that triggers individuals getting in touch with our office is this threat to housing. That in the long-term care setting, it's not only a relationship with a care provider who's the creditor, but it's a relationship with a housing provider. It's that person's landlord.
And Laura, I don't know, were you able to hear the listener who called in, Drew in Pine River, who lost his partner? He lost his wife to cancer. She had been going through cancer treatments and was dealing with medical debt, and he was very worried about losing his home. Are there any protections in place? What do people need to know about protecting their house?
Yes. Angela, I'm so glad that you asked that question, because I want to emphasize that here in the state of Minnesota, there are state statutes that identify property that is exempt from judgment. When I say property is exempt for judgment, these are assets or sources of income that are protected or shielded from being collected via levy or garnishment. And one reason why I would identify it being valuable for an individual to contact a local legal aid firm, just to even get advice if they have limited means and are incurring this situation, is to get information about what property is exempt. Because for individuals who don't have enough information, I'm most concerned about whether an individual may take on secured debt, such as a loan on their homestead or a loan on their vehicle, in order to address harassing phone calls or stress just mounting from unsecured debt. Because that act of taking a loan to address this other form of debt, actually, in a way, it's contractually giving up a protection that had been on that item. So, to explain it more simply, I'm concerned that individuals who find themselves having concerns that they might lose their house or a car because of a form of debt may have at some point thought it was a good idea to take out a loan in order to pay the other form of debt. Where with the medical debt, our office is often advising individuals who are calling our office feeling really stressed out, saying, you know, that creditor could sue you and win, and they're not going to be able to reach into your bank account and take your Social Security. For example, 2 times the amount of a person's Social Security income is protected from levy in a bank account. And that can deliver a tremendous amount of reassurance for individuals calling our office for help, saying, you know, it's not a pleasant situation. As a matter of principle, many people want to pay their debts, but to be able to say mm-hmm. your basic livelihood is protected.
And Laura, I have a written question that came in from Phil in Minneapolis, who wants to know, can you protect your home and assets from nursing home bills by putting it in a trust?
Oh, that if you have that question, I would recommend that individual consult with a private elder law attorney about the specifics of their own assets and income. And what that person may be referring to relates to the balance of what I call the shield provided by mm-hmm. exemptions, what things a creditor is not able to reach by suing to collect on a debt, versus what I call the safety net of public programs that are available to help people tackle medical expenses that go beyond their means. And for individuals who are anticipating long-term care needs or later in life and just recognize life is short, health is fragile, they need to think ahead. Being able to understand that safety net is valuable, because is the safety net here in Minnesota related to medical expenses, that need-based healthcare coverage is medical assistance. That's Minnesota's form of Medicaid. With medical assistance, for individuals who are younger and have not been determined as disabled, there are income limits to who is eligible for medical assistance. When an individual becomes older or is determined as disabled, there's acknowledgement that the expense of long-term care exceeds the means even of individuals who may have comfortable pensions or Social Security, that they may have never anticipated being someone who'd need to apply for need-based care. But again, if the statewide average cost for skilled nursing facility care for 1 month is $9,312. It's hard to find anybody who's generated enough savings in life to have the means to afford that. And so for an individual who asked the question, like the listener who wrote that question before, they may be thinking ahead of that balance of, okay, what is shielded by exemptions? When can the safety net can come in and help me with Medicaid? And that picture, that question related to trust, that gets into the world of, okay, what can I do with what I have now?
Laura,
I might need the need-based coverage.
I want to pause you here because I want to make sure we get another phone call in before our time is up. In Minneapolis, Chris is on the line. And Chris, what do you want to ask or share about medical debt?
Oh, boy, everything you talk about is like, wow, they're just have reviewed my life or something. I was married for 45 years, and because my wife started to get dementia, she couldn't work anymore, and We ended up selling our house, and we ended up getting divorced so that the profits wouldn't be totally eaten up by all that. And she's now in, you know, long-term dementia, 24-hour care. And I get a bill from some dental place that she went to 5 years ago, and they're wanting to collect $200. And I think, well, do I just call them up and say, come on, you guys, really?
Well, Chris, let's ask our guest, Kim, should he call them up and say, really? Did you reach out and interact with folks and question or talk to you?
It depends on who sent you the letter. Was it the dental office directly, or was it a debt collector?
No, it hasn't been a debt collector yet, but those have come too in the past for something, you know, that was done 10 years ago. And I'm like saying, you know, we're not married anymore. She doesn't live here. She's in, you know. So you suggest, just go directly to that dental office and say, hey, this is what's going on, you guys.
Well, I mean, it depends. If the debt is that old, it depends on if it was solely in her name. I mean, that's where sometimes it's best to let old debts lie, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to be careful of calling on really old debts, too, because of the statute of limitations and things like that sometimes. So that would, you know, that it all depends, but I would say I would be really cautious at this point. And if it's only in her name and it's really old, sometimes you just kind of put it off to the side and keep an eye on it. And you can always, you know, give a call later.
Allison, we just have 30 seconds left here, Allison. And just what's your message to people who are listening? Is it just to take some action? Don't, you know, sit and feel as though you're alone in this?
Yeah, I would just say don't feel like this is a personal failing. I do think that the mental health toll on people is significant. And I just want people to know that this is a very broken system that we have. And so they shouldn't feel, and I know it's easy to say, but really don't think that this is something that you have personally failed because you have medical debt. It is the way the system is structured. We need to see that there's changes that happen. We are at RIP Medical Debt doing everything we can to get access to and relieve people of medical debts.
And Allison,
but at the same time, we have
to leave it there. And I appreciate the work that you are doing and for taking time to explain your services today. We've been talking to Allison Sesso, the president and CEO of RIP Medical Debt, as well as Kim Miller, a certified financial counselor with Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota, and Laura Orr, a senior attorney focused on elder law at Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services. Thank you to our listeners who phoned in. This conversation was produced by Maya Beckstrom. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.